Okay, first of all, welcome all. Excited that you are here. I happen to love this stuff, so I hope you will enjoy this as well. Has anyone here ever taken any type of marriage workshop, class, lecture before? How have they worked for you so far? So I have many as well, and as I'm sure you've experienced, some are better than others, some you gain more than out of others than you will. So what I've tried to do is just to explain to you what my agenda is in this, what this is and what this is not. This is, first of all, not going to be any sort of group therapy. Anyone who begins to share anything too personal, you all should feel the right to have a big gong in your hand, and you could just sort of raise that. We are not going to have any of that. Please feel comfortable. No one will be asked to share anything, nor do I, nor any one of you want to hear anything from anyone else. There'll be lots of questions asked, but it'll be of the type of nature that it is totally fine. So please feel comfortable about that, and that's the primary ground rules. This is not going to be a lecture format. My experiences in having sat through many, many lectures in marriage issues are you sit there for an hour and you pull out a couple of nuggets, and then by the time you get home, either you forgot or you said you were going to work on whatever it was that we listened to, and you spent the hour listening, and then it never or doesn't often translate into anything practical. So what I've decided to do is do a little experiment. Is once I actually have you all captive here for an hour or so, you've already taken the time to come, to sit, to work on something. So instead of my sitting up here and lecturing, we'll actually spend most of the time doing some activities. So you'll actually be doing most of the talking, and I will be doing very little of the talking. But you'll be talking to yourselves. So once we get started, you can spread out, you'll find your own little area, and you'll be able to go through that, which we will we'll work on. We'll see how this goes. Okay, so let's get right to it. So if I presented a possibility of three options, three things to work on that we would start with as the most important things that we should be working on, here are the big three that I'm sure you all have sat through many lectures on. Number one, communication. We could be working on that this fine evening. Number two would be deepening friendship. Or number three, conflict resolution. Those are your three choices as to what we should work on. What is the first primary thing that we should be working on? These are your choices. Communication, we could spend our time working on that. Deepening friendship, or conflict resolution. So by a quick show of hands. Now, when you raise your hand here, it has nothing to do with the state of your marriage. This is just about your friend's marriage, and you want to help them. So I understand. I know that routine. So raising your hand as to which one of those, who would think that the most important thing to work on should be conflict resolution? Who would say communication issues? What? Yeah, I'm not looking. And deepening friendship. Two. So it's interesting. So what most of tonight's activity is going to be based on is by a psychologist by the name of John Gottman. Anyone here, John Gottman? A few of you? So he wrote a fantastic book. I've been to some of his programs, some of his trainings. I've read a couple of his books as well. He's a psychologist out of Seattle. He's actually a religious Jew. He's a researcher by trade, and he's spent years researching marriage. He has this fantastic concept which he calls the love lab. Since he's a researcher, so he's not a clinical psychologist who talks about people's feelings, he actually researches. So he sets him up, for anyone who's not familiar with his work, he sets you up in a little apartment that he has in Seattle, and he hooks you up to all sorts of gadgets that measure your heartbeat and your sweat glands and your pulse and your all sorts of things, and then they record you for a weekend while you spend a weekend, voluntarily of course, in his little love lab. And they have measurements for all types of different communications, the way that you interact between the spouse, and they came up with a whole bunch of studies. And his research resulted in the following thing. He disregards the idea of communication and of conflict resolution as not being in any way, shape, or form primary in a healthy marriage. And he has research to back him up that couples can be happily married and fight fairly regularly if they learn how to fight well, disagree, and never resolve their conflicts. Because in fact, the things that you are arguing about now in your marriages, you will be arguing about next year, and the year after that, and probably for the next 10, 15, 20, 30, God willing, till 120 years, 80% of the things we fight about don't ever go away, because they're just part of who we are. We are two different people living together in a home, and it results in conflict. Lots of it. And it is not a matter of resolving it, but learning really to do this. He's not so into conflict resolution, nor communication. So I'm not going to get into his reasonings why. His big thing, what we're going to focus on primarily tonight, is deepening friendship. And his research has shown that the most fundamental concept in... Thank you very much. The most fundamental concept in a healthy marriage is that it maintains a deep, ongoing, developing friendship. Now, as obvious as that sounds, it's not so obvious, or it's not so easy to do, because as life gets busy, what happens is a marriage very often moves from a wonderful relationship of friends into some sort of a business deal, in which there's a number of tasks that need to get done in a limited amount of time, and it becomes a lot of partnering to make sure that it gets done, and obviously couples connect and they talk and they schmooze, but a constantly deepening friendship, not a deepening just that we're working this out together, but a friendship is the most fundamental thing that you can possibly have in a marriage. When you know each other well, you know the likes and dislikes and the personality quirks and what to expect and what not to expect, the dreams, the hopes, the shortcomings, when you know that intimately well, it takes an entirely different thing. Now, why is that true? Because when you have a good friendship, what it provides is the key against the absolutely inevitable negative interactions and annoyances that happen in a marriage. Now, one of the biggest proofs that marriage is a God-given concept is because no human being could have ever possibly conceived of something as illogical as taking two people who grew up with different homes, different backgrounds, different values, and you put them together in a little apartment and say, go make a life with each other. It's almost absurd when you think about, like, how can this work? We are so different in so many ways, as similar as we are, it's inevitable that there will be constant conflict as you work things out through life. What will give you the key to make that work is the level of friendship and connection that you have. I just want to give you two quick examples as to what I mean and what I'm talking about as I say this. Just picking an example, I've never really seen anything like this, but if I could have just imagined something like this would happen on a Friday, it's maybe 20 minutes before Shabbos, and the missus is in the kitchen, and the kitchen is hopping. There are three things in the oven, and someone's putting dessert together, and she's on the phone with her mother-in-law, and company is coming. It's just one of those things you walk in, and it's just like 1,000 things going on in the kitchen at once. Husband walks in 20 minutes before Shabbos, just get out of the shower, is clean, fresh shaven, everything is well. He walks into this, and it's like walking into a tornado. So his first reaction, of course, is, I want to help. Because he sees his wife is just absolutely, you know, berserk, getting everything ready before Shabbos. So the problem is that the husband in this situation has no idea how to help. He can't do anything. He doesn't know, like, what's in the oven, when's it supposed to come out, getting dessert together, setting the table, she's trying to get dressed, put on her makeup, while she's doing all these things, talking to my mother. I don't even know where to begin. So he's looking around the kitchen, he's trying to stay out of the way, trying to be a help, he doesn't know what to do, so he looks at the garbage, and he's like, the garbage, I can help. I'll take out the garbage, because it looks like it's getting, I'll be a big help. So he very quietly goes over to the garbage, and he takes it out, and he starts walking out the door. Before he even gets to the front door, he hears this horrible shriek. Turns around, and just hears his wife with this platter that was filled with some type of liquid, now empty, standing over the empty pail, saying, what happened to the garbage? And he's sitting there like, oh. So now the garbage pail's filled with smell. So she turns to him exasperated. It's right before Shabbos, and says, look, if you can't help, just please stay out of my kitchen. Oh, how does he react to that? These are the types of things that will happen all the time. How does he react as he walks away? I tried to be a help. Like, I tried to take out the garbage. And it totally flops. Now there's a bigger mess, and she's angry at me, and she gives me one of those responses. If you can't be a help, just please stay out of my way. Well, depending on the nature, the baseline of your relationship, will be able to say, listen, it's 20 minutes before Shabbos. I forgot to tell her that I was taking out the garbage. I made a bigger mess. You know, you can sort of push that stuff, those kinds of comments away. If your relationship is not there, that becomes a very personal attack. How I interpret that line, I made a mistake, she gets hurt, she yells at me, now what happens? Well, where is your baseline in that relationship as to whether or not you can laugh about it an hour later, whether or not you can talk about it, or whether or not it spirals very quickly? Those kinds of things will happen in life all the time. What will determine how we respond is that baseline. I had a guy once called me, left me a message, a vicious message on my machine. Something had happened in Shul, I don't remember what it was. Just one of those nasty messages. You listen to it once, you can't even believe a human being would talk to another human being that way. Forget about a congregant calling up a rabbi student. It was unbelievable. So I didn't respond to it. I didn't respond. It was not a person who has never complained before. He complains every once in a while, but this was beyond. Didn't respond. I was waiting for him to call and apologize for such behavior. A couple of days go by, he never calls, and we bump into each other. So I say, you know, I got your message. It's a little bit harsh. Do you know what he said to me? Because I've been waiting for you to call to ask what's wrong, because it was so out of the ordinary that I would respond that way. Surely you must have realized something was going on in my life that you should have called to check up and see, like, what's going on. Now, why didn't I do that? Because I sort of expected this kind of behavior. Like, it wasn't so out of the ordinary. It was like, I expect this kind of behavior from him. This was a little bit over the top. Whereas in his mind, this was I never behaved this way in his mind. So in his mind, he's acting so out of the ordinary that he couldn't believe that I hadn't called him to find out, like, hey man, what's going on with you? Whereas in my world, this is pretty ordinary, just a little bit over the top, like he should be apologizing. Where's that baseline for behavior? That baseline determines how much we deal with almost everything. And in marriage, says Dr. Gottman, that friendship will determine what we expect as our baseline and how we will respond to a tremendous amount of things. Okay, so let's get to our activities. So we'll start with number one, the concept of shalom, shalom bayis. What's the root of the word shalom? What's the root of the word? Shalem. Shalem means complete. Full, but really complete. Now, when you talk about completion, you're almost always talking about different things coming together to form completion. If it's a lot of the same thing, we don't use the word complete. We use the word I have a lot of it or I have a little of it. But when I have lots of different things coming together, then we can talk about the concept of completion. Shalom bayis, shalom in the house, recognizes that we're very different. And we have lots of different personality quirks, different personality styles, trying to get together. Just as an example, let's talk about introvert, extrovert. This is one of my favorites. I have discussed this in various different contexts. If you Google extrovert, introvert, you'll get 1,000 different definitions. Lots of different people who are more like the social scene, less the social scene, whatever. One of the definitions that I heard when I was in Georgia State was as follows. I really love this, and I've used this very often. Introvert, extrovert is not so much whether or not you are good in social settings, but whether or not you draw your energy from social settings, or you have to exert energy in social settings. Meaning, an introvert, like myself, doesn't necessarily mind being in, those of you who are, anyone who knows me, I'm a big introvert in this definition. Doesn't mean that I don't like social settings or that I'm not good at it, which I might not be. You don't have to agree with that or disagree with that. It's fine. But it doesn't mean that I'm either awkward, uncomfortable, or I dislike it. It just means it's exhausting for me to be in a social setting. I exert energy when I'm around people. To engage a conversation with somebody who I don't know very well takes energy. I have to be there, I have to sit, I work at it. I leave Kiddush Shabbos afternoon and I am exhausted because it's an hour of being on, and being social for me is exerting energy. My wife is an extrovert in this definition, and she draws energy from people. When she's like, you could be tired and suddenly you see people and you see they like light up. It's like, this is great, new people to talk with. Don't ever pull me away from this because I draw my energy from it. When I'm around people, I feel myself being filled up with energy. Now, obviously, if you go with this type of definition, how do people recoup? How do we recharge our batteries? So an introvert recharges by being at himself. I need some quiet time. I need to be alone because I'm tired. And when I'm tired, I need to be by myself to regain my energy. An extrovert, being by themselves is painful. It's like not, like 5 minutes of silence is like nails on a chalkboard. An extrovert actually recharges their battery by being around people. It is engaging, it's energizing to be around people. So at the end of a long Saturday night, the introvert is dreaming of, after Havdalah is made, of like going into a couch by themselves with a book. Like that is a dream. Whereas the extrovert is dreaming about like, let's go out because I'm tired. They're both tired and they're thinking very different things because they recharge their batteries in very different ways. Now there are a lot of ways in which this goes. The psychologist will tell you that an extrovert, because of the way that they work, often, besides for some of these other things, will speak before totally thinking things through. So personality style, like they think as they're talking. As they work things out, I talk, and that's how I work things out. An introvert is much more likely not to speak until they have everything that they said, they want to say, worked out in their minds. They do studies like this. You know those kind of games, the game shows where like throw a question out and you have to hit a buzzer? Extroverts are excellent at that because they'll hit the buzzer before they've even thought of the answer. They don't care. They'll think on the fly. The introverts are horrible at that game because they're like thinking it and they won't hit the buzzer until they've worked it through. But imagine if an extrovert and an introvert are having a little dispute. So the extrovert like wants to talk about it a lot because like through talking about it, things become clear to them. They need to work it out while they're talking, whereas the introvert doesn't want to say anything until they have it worked out in their mind. But the more that they're silent, the more that the extrovert can't handle the silence and pulls them in. And then it was like, I'm just trying to think, but you just threw a new question and I can't think about this new question because I'm thinking about the old question. And you have lots of issues because of the fact that we work very differently in terms of how we think in those types of things. As an example, this, what we do is we'll do our personal exercise in a second, just a quick one. As an example, just to, if it wasn't clear enough what I'm talking about, myself being an introvert and my wife being an extrovert, so and at the end of a Shabbos in which if I give the Joshua Shabbos morning and I have to be on Kiddush and we have company Shabbos afternoon, by the time Shabbos is over, I am just smashed. I can't move. Physically exhausted. Now my wife is also totally physically exhausted, but she just wants to go out. So one time she actually arranged for us to go somewhere with another couple on a Saturday night after I had been through all of that. Now as I'm walking out the door, what's already in my mind as I'm walking out the door? Like, when are we getting back home? I have no energy or patience for this. And she's the totally opposite. Now the mistake that I made is not saying anything about this because I hadn't yet gone through these classes. I didn't know anything about it. So after about 15 minutes as we're out, it becomes clear to me that this is going to be interminable. It's not going to end. It's going to be like one of those all-nighters. And I'm already on zero. So I totally shut down. I am like a non-factor at this entire gathering. I'm just in my own world because I have zero left to give. It finally ends after 3 hours of misery. We get in the car, and the first thing she says to me is like, "What in the world happened to you?" That was the most embarrassing scene I've ever been part of, sitting next to you, and you don't open up your mouth for 3 hours. I go, "What happened?" So what happened was that she had no idea what was going on in my world, and she needed to be out, and I needed to be asleep, and we didn't connect. The key here is the communication. So our first, like, if you want to like just spread out a little bit, go right ahead. We're going to be doing this for the rest of the night. That's the longest I'm going to speak consecutively tonight. So if you manage to make it through here, you'll be fine the rest of the way. Work through, if it's not already clear to you, who is what. Now again, on this spectrum, you're not always one way or another. The last time I did this, I had 11 couples. 9 out of the 11 were intermarried, introvert, extrovert. 9 out of 11, which is a fascinating, so I'm curious what we'll get out of this. I have a feeling it'll be somewhat similar, which makes for a fantastic opening start to recognize how different you function when you're working that way. So for the first little exercises as follows, come to a conclusion as to what you both are, because your spouse might not be as sure as you think you are about what you are, and then you both have to come up with one recent scenario where you guys ran into trouble. It didn't have to be a full-fledged fight, but something where, because of the fact that you related differently, something didn't go smoothly. Meaning, like an example that I gave, I ran into trouble where we had a horrible Saturday night together because I was not able to communicate that I had very different needs during that moment than my wife did. So your task is to uncover, be clear about who is what, and then you both have to come up with one example where, had you been able to communicate that, things would have gone very differently. 4 minutes. Go ahead. Okay, one more minute. Okay, quick show of hands. How many of the couples would say that, obviously now everyone's on a spectrum. Sometimes I feel more good, that's okay, but would generally define themselves as being an intermarried couple as far as this goes? Special. How many would say that they're mixed?
Mixed meaning
like one's an introvert. One would be a much more clearly defined introvert versus a much more clearly defined extrovert, as opposed to people feel like I'm a little bit of both. So almost pretty strong numbers as well. Now that's an amazing thing to recognize. Those of you who are the same, it's really, you can, like, whether or not you're both extroverts, you'll go out all the time, or if you're introverts, you'll be the most happy just like closing your doors. That's great. But for the rest of us, it doesn't work that way. And it's a constant balance of being in touch with each other as to what your needs are. One spouse's needs are to go out, and another's are to stay in. One spouse, when there's a little bit of a dispute, needs their space, and the other wants to keep getting closer to talk about it. To be aware of that, and allow each other to figure those things out. That's one of the most key things, is simply being able to communicate that, and the point of this exercise is just to be able to pull this card out when something happens and says, just remember, I function differently than you. I think differently than you. I have very different needs. I just need you to be sensitive. For example, in my example that I gave, I needed to say to my wife, "I, if you just tell me this is 2 hours at tops and I'll be home, I can make it. But this unending evening, I can't handle." So, or say something along the lines of, you know what, we're going to go to this dinner together. We're going to drive separately. Because dinners traditionally start at night. At the night, it means it's been the end of a long day. By the time, if a dinner starts at 6:30, by the time 8:30 rolls around, the introvert in the couple is absolutely finished and ready to go home. The extrovert in the couple is just getting started. They're in a room full of people, full of friends, on a Tuesday night. Like, what could be better? Or a Sunday night. So it's a matter of saying, you know what? I respect that. I'm so happy for you to have a great time with your friends. We're going to drive separately. We'll walk in together as a happily married couple. And then I'm going to sneak out at 8:30 because I can't be here, but I want for you to have a good time. So it's simple things like that will entirely change, as opposed to one spouse sitting at the table pouting for an hour, at which point neither one of them go home happy, even though they had potential to have a wonderful evening together just for 2 hours as opposed to three. So there's simple forms of communication that will entirely change everything. Okay, next. So John Gottman has this concept called love maps. Love maps is a great term because what does a map tell us? Yes, where things are, how to get from one place to another. What do men hate using? Directions and maps. No, I'll figure this one out myself. Yeah, it doesn't work so well on the road, and it certainly doesn't work so well with our spouses either. I've tried it. So the better map you have, the better off you'll be. Now, in Gottman's world, a love map is the idea, the full understanding of all the ins and outs of your spouse. The things which we think we know, especially in this room, I see some of us have been married for far longer than others, and the longer we're married, the more that we think and better we think that we know our spouse. But there are always things that we don't. There are always developing things, new concerns, new fears. And the more that you do this, the better you actually build the bedrock of the foundation of a relationship. So I have here some cards. We're going to hand them out. There are actually 20 cards in each packet. 20 questions, excuse me. 20 questions. Four packets, each one has 5 cards. The way that this one works is that you have to ask your spouse, whatever card you have, you ask your spouse, and they have to answer the question that you're asking them. So, for example, the first one is, name my two closest friends. So the husband would ask his wife to name, or that's probably them, because he probably doesn't have any friends. But the wife can ask, the wife can ask her husband, name my two closest friends, and the husband has to know whether or not he can actually get correct who are his wife's two closest friends. Now, if you're really competitive, I actually have pencils here. You can do this. It is a great game in terms of actually seeing who actually does better. There's a whole point system. You know, you can do if you get it fully right, you get 3 points. If you get it partially right, you know, you can judge whether or not the 1 point, 2 point, 3 points, and see how well you do. But the way that this one works is there are 20 questions. You can go through all of them or switch off. We'll have 5-10 minutes to go through them. These are a lot of fun. Some of them are much more serious than others, as you'll see. But they're basically a lot of fun. And take 5 minutes again once you actually came out. I've done this before where I give these out for my homework. Nobody ever does it. But this is really where the work is, actually spending the time. So take the time. We'll take 5-10 minutes now. And one card per couple. One actual per couple.
Okay, guys. You are allowed to finish these at home if you do not get through all of them. It's actually a great activity. You can keep these handy in your room, in your car. Every once in a while you have a chance, you're just driving along the two of you, you pull these kinds of things out. They're really, they're often changing and a lot of fun. I have another set if you didn't have enough fun doing that. This one is a little bit different. Those who have been around the children or have seen any movies with children will be familiar with the following conversation. How was school today?
Good.
What'd you do?
Nothing.
Who did you know? What'd you learn?
Nothing.
Now, whose fault is that conversation? The parents, or whoever the one is asking the questions. Because when you ask a child what we call a closed question, you're generally going to get a response that basically has no content to it. But it's actually a lot harder to ask the open-ended question. It takes a lot more energy to figure out a way to craft the question in a way that elicits a meaningful response. So we'll do one other thing from Gottman tonight. Is the open-ended question as it relates to marriage, not just to children. Often what gets lost in the getting things done of the busyness of the day are those types of questions that are these open-ended questions sometimes do, but very often don't as often get asked. So he presented a series of questions, which I took from them, again, 20. These are much more difficult questions to answer, much more meaningful questions. A lot of those were just sort of, you know, getting to know, like, what's my favorite dessert? Those are valuable things to know, because if you don't know your spouse's favorite dessert, then when you happen to go out for a lunch meeting or you're coming back from out of town, you don't know what to bring back. It's an important thing to know what that favorite dessert is, so that you know what it is to surprise your spouse with on a birthday for a gift. Those little things. These are a little bit more involved questions. You're for sure not going to get through all 20. I'm not going to give you enough time to do that, as we're going to run out of time. Hang on to them. These are really the great ones to keep, pass them around. These are the great ones to keep in your bedroom, on a nightstand, in your car, in the glove compartment. You're taking a long trip, you know, you pull them out. These are great conversation starters. These you can work through together. Sort of share the questions and share your thoughts on the questions. Do as many of them as you can. You can skip around. They're all the same. They're all just good questions. There are a bunch of them that are relating to children. Some of them are related to having children in terms of what's my biggest challenge as a mom or as a dad right now. Some of them are even just like, what do you want our children to be like, which is unrelated. So work through the ones that fit. There are 20. You're not going to get through all 20 of them anyway. Pick and choose the ones that you want to do, and spend another 5-10 minutes. Then we'll do one more thing after this. So go ahead. You know, if you want to, again, I recommend if you want to spread out, if you feel more comfortable, please feel free to do so. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you didn't get through all of them. I hope you enjoyed the experience of working them through. They're a lot of fun to do. Playing onto them, do them in your free time, spare time, as I have mentioned. Let me do one more thing before we call it a night. Who here likes to receive compliments? I love getting compliments. I think most of us do. There is something extremely powerful about hearing from someone else how good you are. It's just a nice feeling. I know many, many people who do lots of funny things just in order to get compliments. But even those who are not fishing for them generally appreciate them. That is a very powerful thing. I'll share. So I believe I once shared this story from the pulpit, but on a Shabbos, I don't know, it was a year or so ago. I remember exactly the scenario, but I was walking by myself from my house to wherever my family was, somewhere else down Holly. And as I was walking in the middle of the afternoon, I might have left to get something from my house during lunch, I don't remember, on Shabbos afternoon, as I was walking, there was an individual, one of the men in the community, was walking the other way towards me. And I thought it was a certain person. I was very excited that I had the opportunity. Here we were, it was a Shabbos afternoon, the streets were quiet, everybody was inside eating lunch, and we were about to cross paths. never have time really to schmooze with him. And it was just the two of us about to cross paths, and I got really excited. And just as we were about to reach each other, I realized it wasn't who I thought it was. It was somebody else who I was far less excited to see. So I wished him a quick Shabbos, and we went on. And as I was walking away, I couldn't help but notice how, like, physically disappointed I was that it wasn't the person who I had wanted to speak to. I was trying to figure out why I was so excited to have seen that person and was so disappointed that it wasn't who I thought it was, and it occurred to me right away. The person who I had hoped it was, almost every single time he sees me, compliments me on what a great job I'm doing as an assistant rabbi. And when I thought it was him, I didn't realize it until I thought about it afterwards. I got excited to see him because this is going to be good for me, I thought, as I was approaching him. And then I realized it was just somebody else who just says good job. And so I'm like, that's nowhere near as fun and exciting as someone who's actually going to say what a great job I'm doing. And I remember being left with such an impression as to how much I looked forward to running across such a person who was going to say something nice to me. It was exciting. It was fun. I was like looking forward to it and was visibly disappointed when it wasn't him. And I've always taken that as a lesson, how powerful that is. With our own spouses, we often give the least compliments because we sort of get used to each other and their abilities. I sometimes am amazed at how Shabbos ever gets made. I just can't even believe the things that go on in getting ready for Shabbos, and that there's food on the table, and all the kids are bathed and dressed, and I had nothing to do with it. It's just amazing that all of that got done every Shabbos, and you forget about that. And when I come home after having spoken three times in shul over Shabbos, which used to take me 3 weeks to prepare for, and now it takes me far less, but you know, if you're like, that's what you do. But meanwhile, that took a lot of effort. Then we live our lives doing things which we both used to think were absolutely amazing, and they happen now regularly, and they sort of go unnoticed. Yet the excitement is when you know you're going to walk in the door and someone's going to greet you and say something so nice about it. That's exciting. It's so much fun. It's such a relationship builder when you know that this person is going to have something nice to say. It's an amazing experience, and we are very poor at it with the people with whom we are closest to. We're much better at pointing out the faults and deficiencies and the should'ves and the could'ves and I asked you and did, rather than all of the comments. So for our final activity for this evening, so this again is listed right off of Gottman. This is a different part of my circuit because I went to San Francisco about 2 years ago. I did a training with them. This is off of one of those things. It's got his name on the bottom. There's a list of 70-some-odd fondness and admiration words. You can pass them around. Your task is to each choose. Tonight you can do this many more times at home later. But for tonight, to choose three and actually come up with an example. You have to come up with a specific instance or an example where your spouse demonstrated one of those qualities, or a quality that you plan or hope that will be passed on to your children. This is a quality that you have, and I hope that we'll be able to pass on to our children with specific examples of something that they have done, shown you, demonstrated, you can point to, and you can turn to your spouse and say, you have this quality, and I saw it here. Now, just today, well, the other half of this is accepting a compliment. We are very poor at accepting compliments. For example, today, when I picked up my daughter and two of her friends from soccer practice, today I'm like working on this afternoon. I leave the office, I go pick them up, they all hop in the car, and I won't say, there are three girls in the back seat of my car, they're all 9 years old, and one of them says to one of them, wow, I didn't know you were such a good goalie. To which she said, no, I'm not. Now, that was this one of those general compliments that's easy to deflect, like, oh, well, maybe I'm not. So then she got specific. She said, what do you mean? You kicked away so many balls today. So she had a good response, no, it's only three. And I said, listen, like, this is what we learned to do this at a very young age, and it just maintained until somebody said something, and I don't know if it's humility, or we're embarrassed, or we really don't believe it about ourselves. We're very good at deflecting and saying, no, I'm not. And even then when the person gets specific and actually says, not just that I'm evaluating you and saying you're very good, I'm actually saying you did this, it was very well. We're still very good at saying, nah, it really wasn't that way. Well, if you're the one giving the compliment, and every time you give a compliment, the one who receives it basically says, nah, no. What you eventually stop giving compliments because it's not really much fun to give compliments to a person who turns around and says, it's not true. It doesn't work. You stop doing it. And it's actually a skill to learn to be able to say, thank you. Or, I did that for you because I love you. Or, I did that for our family. Or, I'm so glad you noticed that because I wanted you to realize that I was doing that for you. To receive a compliment and acknowledge, thank you for saying that. I'm so glad you noticed that. Or, I wanted you to notice that. I did that for you. Thank you. Is a totally different response. The bonds that are created in a home in which partners are able to say compliments, I saw that you did this, and the other one responds and says, I know, I'm so glad you noticed, I did that for you. Thank you for noticing. That's because I love you. That's because I love our kids, because I love our family. Thank you for noticing is a world of difference. It's not easy to do. We're very good at saying, nah, it was nothing. But it's a skill. Find three things on the list, come up with a specific example, and then I'll let you go for the evening. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so you have all your cards. I highly recommend that you hang on to them. The main thing tonight, just in quick summary, we'll do some other things as we go on, for those who return. But tonight's main thing was the concept of friendship, of deepening one's friendship, is actually one of the fundamental bedrocks of an intimate, passionate a life together in which you know each other well, understand each other's quirks and idiosyncrasies and all of the good stuff that goes on in a person's life, because when you know each other well, in that knowledge is actually power and relationship. And it's really key, despite how obvious it sounds, but as you experience hopefully going through these questions, hopefully you learn something about each other a little bit, because that's what really happens. There are these things that somehow slip through the cracks in a married life. Like, I didn't know that about you. I didn't realize that you were struggling with this, or you were afraid of this, or really wanted to accomplish that. And in that is where the relationship is really based. Keep the cards. Go back to them. I have plenty of other questions if you can't come up with more on your own besides for the cards that you have. If you want these yellow sheets of paper, are great. Put them up on your refrigerator somewhere every day. Have to find one thing. Make sure that you have that one compliment. It entirely changes the face of a relationship in which there is a giving and a receiving of words of admiration, of compliments. One quick scheduling issue. We were supposed to have another one next week on Monday nights. Mrs. Feldman has since subsequently scheduled her pre-Pesach thing, which I assume many of the women are going to want to be going to next week. So I have a feeling that I'm just going to wait till after Pesach. We'll have the second installment sometime later, or else we'll be. I don't want to start at like 8:30. I think it's a little bit too late to start. I'm assuming so. So it'll be after Pesach. Follow your emails. And we'll get together with Hashem. Again, hope you enjoyed, and have a great night.